Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:08 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is March 19th. And I thought that today I would kick off with the Semiconductors Index because it is now closing above 1,400 points. And the simple fact of the matter is that 1,400 points was the point at which it started encountering resistance back at the beginning of 2018. We certainly had a big pullback in at the beginning of the third quarter that broke the uptrend. Now we've had a rollicking bull market rally or a counter trend rally, depending on one's perspective, over the course of the last 10 or 11 weeks. And now it is approximating its previous peak. So on the one hand, this is a very important level above which it really needs to push in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The other side of that is that this is a potential area of resistance, that it has failed to sustain moves above the 1,400-point level on three previous occasions, and potentially this is the fourth. That almost equal balance of both positive and negative really suggests that we are going to be in for at least some pause and consolidation around this level. Best of all possible worlds would be if it extended the advance for another few weeks and then consolidated above the 1400 point level, but that is potentially I think too much to ask for. Micron Technologies is coming out with their earnings tomorrow. That was one of the poster childs for the advance that we saw in the semiconductors index last year. And it was also one of the biggest decliners from the middle of last year. So that's now right in the region of the trend mean, and there is going to be a weighing tomorrow based on its earnings about what the prospects for this particular part of the semiconductors sector there is. What we have seen, though, is that some of the graphics card producers have been rallying, and Advanced Micro Devices was up almost 10% in here today. And that is now clearly confirming support in the region of the trend mean. One of the reasons why the graphics card producers are doing better than regular chips is because of the increasing ambition of companies like Google and Microsoft, and indeed Nvidia, to create streaming services for games. One of the things that people are really most concerned with when they're playing online video games is lag, that the connection with the internet is just not fast enough to tackle the quantity of data that is moving around. So it eventually ends up in you getting killed because your character simply doesn't move while everything else is going on and you become an easy target. Companies like Google are looking at this as an attempt to potentially break into this market in much the same way that Apple captured the music market through iTunes. Google is at least has an ambition to capture the video game market in much the same way by providing a forum through its massive computing power and cloud infrastructure to provide a forum for games to be rented, subscribed to, bought, and played from their servers. And that's a potentially important market for graphics card producers like Nvidia and AMD. Well, of course, what that also really I think brings home is that there is considerable variability in the performance of semiconductors. But the most important thing is that it generally tends to be a highly cyclical business, and therefore it's very clearly leveraged to the growth of the global economy. There were a number of interesting things in here today. The world is looking at the merger between Deutsche Bank and Commerzbank, and that's probably more reflective of the problems that exist. But there was an important court decision in here today which said that Italy's support or the use of deposit insurance to support one of its banks was in fact legal and not an antitrust suit. And that's particularly important for European banking sectors. It's perhaps much more important than the merger between Deutsche and Commerzbank, because it gives countries a freer hand in both consolidating their respective domestic sectors, but also lending some assistance and ensuring that depositors aren't discomfited. And it also removes at least part of the onus that's been put on them to bail depositors in. So that is a potentially good news for the European banking sector, and it is right now in the region of the trend mean. It has certainly broken the downtrend that was present for all of last year. If it can sustain a move above the psychological 100 level, well, then we have at least the potential prospect for a medium-term low to have been formed and potentially a rally back up towards the upper side of the range. And if that were to occur over the course of a year or two, well, it would still be a 50% advance from where we are right now. Even then, it's still within a much longer-term base formation. And it could be quite a long time before that base formation is eventually completed. There has been a lot of commentary about the potential for Europe to start to do better, and the Euro stocks was in positive territory in here today, and it is pushing above the trend mean, and this is rather positive. Now, this isn't by far, we were a long way from calling this a consistent trend. It has been prone to some swinging pullbacks over the course of the last decade, but it is pushing on the upside right now, and it has broken the downward bias evident over all of 2018. And as long as that remains the case, well, we can probably give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, and not least because the ECB is, I think, walking back from any kind of commitment to normalization of interest rates. There's another LTRO program starting in a few months' time. Then there is also the potential that we could have an additional round of quantitative easing if the European economy doesn't pick up. The DAX index is now back above its trend mean, so that is a positive. Obviously, it needs to do better than that and push back up into the overhead trading range. The MDAX has pushed back up into the overhead trading range, so that is potentially positive. And the mid-caps in the UK are also back above their trend mean and pushing back up into that overhead trading range as well. So what investors will have learned over the course of the last decade is that with some of these indices where they are prone to big pullbacks, that you buy the dips. As long as that remains the case, then I think we're going to be still in a pretty benign environment. It's when you start to see overhead resistance becoming more of an issue, and most particularly as we approach the 20,000 level, the big question is going to be whether it can hold the move above the trend mean, but most particularly whether it can hold the 17,000 level on any subsequent period of weakness. That's going to be the big question. If we do look at the outlook for some of these markets, then it's the outlook for their respective currencies is probably going to be the key arbiter of whether they can attract foreign investment. The euro has now posted a move above the 113 area, and it was in positive territory again in here. There is still a sequence of lower rally highs over the course of the last 3 months. It does need to break that in order to confirm a return to demand dominance, and most particularly, it needs to push back above the trend mean. So that would be a meaningful rally from where we are right now. So far, it has been what we can barely say is just about steady. There is a big argument about just how steady the dollar is and how justified that is. The Bloomberg Dollar Index, which has a broader base and less of a weighting for the euro, has been pulling back over the course of the last couple of weeks, and it is coming back to test its sequence of higher reaction lows. It's right in the region of the trend mean at present, so this is an area where we might anticipate some support starting to come back in. One of the primary messages that Jeff Gundlach was making in his presentation last week was, although he certainly didn't put it in these terms, but that when we look at any market, then especially when you've had a market that's been dominated by very clear reasons for why people might have been supporting it, you can identify a mania by the fact that there is a tolerance for contradiction. And when we look at the US bond market, the fact that deficits are multiplying and there is little prospect of that condition changing anytime soon, and where there has been an outright support for the view that deficits don't matter. Well, that is very similar to the prognostication back in the late 1990s that earnings don't matter. And we know what happened after that. So that represents a very clear threat to the bond market. Of course, if deficits are going to continue to expand, and the Federal Reserve is walking back from its commitment to raise interest rates, well, then that is not dollar bullish. So that's, I think, a rather significant factor. I was quite bullish on the dollar as long as they were willing to continue to raise interest rates and reduce the size of the balance sheet. Well, they're still reducing the size of the balance sheet. So that has been one of the factors which has been supportive of the dollar over the course of the last while. But the fact that they are no longer raising interest rates is something that is obviously not a particularly bullish factor. But the euro isn't the strongest currency in the world either, so we haven't really seen a lot of support there. What we are starting to see, though, is that a number of other currencies are strengthening. Most particularly, and to my personal surprise, the Mexican peso has strengthened up pretty impressively over the course of the last five or six sessions, and it is now trading just below its trend mean and pressuring the sequence of the dollar sequence of higher reaction lows over the course of the last 2 years. So if it breaks that sequence, then there is a clear argument that the Mexican peso has got further to run. Then when we look at some of the other commodity exporters, well, the Brazilian real has steadied again in the region of its trend mean, and it looks unlikely that it is going to sustain a move weaker than 4. When we look at some of the other Latin American currencies, this is the Chilean peso, and that has also paused and very clearly also starting to develop support around that 700 point level at the end of last year. When we look at the Colombian peso, then it is now right in the region of the trend mean and also demonstrating support from the beginning of this year. The Latin America dollar index is very heavily weighted by the Brazilian real and the Mexican peso, and so far it has just about been putting in this progression of higher reaction lows over the last 6 months. It hasn't quite yet been able to push back above the trend mean, but the index has more than halved since 2011, so this is comparatively cheap compared to some of the other currencies that are still out there. And if we are in the latter stages of this bull market and there is continued demand for industrial resources, well, then that should be beneficial for the commodity exporting sector. And Latin America is a commodity exporting continent, so there is certainly scope for some of those currencies to do better, and also then their stock markets. So we're definitely seeing that in Brazil, where they have a new right-wing populist administration. The Mexican stock market is not doing quite as well, and not least because they've got a left-wing populist administration. And of course, what's going on in Venezuela is going to set up a really historic buying opportunity when that eventually ends, but it is still trending down. I think that's probably the best way to characterize it. Then there is a clear dearth of governance in South Africa, and the power cuts are certainly weighing on the currency, but it is still has not broken the sequence of lower rally highs. So that is certainly one to watch, considering that when we look at the medium-term trend, this is an important area of resistance for the rand around the 14 area. And if the dollar breaks that sequence of lower rally highs against a background where the dollar hasn't been especially firm against most currencies, well, then that will be quite an indictment for the rand. So it is certainly one to keep a particularly close eye on, I suspect. Now, when we look at what's going on in India, well, of course, we have the election coming up, and what I found particularly interesting today was that the RBI was saying that that India is going to maintain its fiscal stability. Well, that is perhaps might be accurate after the election, but right now it looks like Modi is very clearly trying to buy this election. But the market is looking beyond that because the Indian rupee has strengthened up pretty impressively. Now, it was weaker in here today, so it does look like we're going to see an unwind of the dollar short-term oversold condition here, but this has been an historic, or at least perhaps a historic is too strong a word, but we don't see the rupee trading above its trend mean particularly often. And on each of the previous occasions, it has failed to sustain these moves. So the big question now is, if we are going to have some consolidation, is it going to stay stronger than that 70 level? The Bombay Banks Index is one of the best performing banking indexes globally, and it has got a really quite impressive record of leading the wider market higher in India. So the fact that it is not just at new highs but extending that advance is rather suggestive of increasing enthusiasm towards the Indian market. China today was a little bit softer, but not in an especially dynamic manner. It's still very much within this range. I've characterized bull markets in China as state-sponsored. There is increasing evidence that that is exactly what we're getting right now, with the fact that they have been battling against the growth of the shadow banking sector for the last 2 years and largely achieved that goal. They're now calling on the banking sector and credit providers to support the economy. Well, then that is really a green light for speculation in the Chinese markets. And it's particularly good news for the banking sector. So banks, they were a little softer in here today, but that was a very impressive breakout we had 3 weeks ago. As long as that is continuing to hold, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And Tencent, which is one of the most iconic shares in terms of its dominance of the domestic tech market, was in positive territory again in here today and has now demonstrated support in the region of the trend mean. So this does look like a recovery scenario. If we take another look at the technology sector, Well, Amazon in here today was up at nearly $20, and it has now broken its sequence of lower rally highs. And now the question is it going to hold it? What obviously people are starting to think about is the outcome of the trade war, but that is a secondary consideration compared with the outlook for the interest rate environment following tomorrow's Fed meeting. Nobody is expecting them to move interest rates. The big question is, what do they think they're going to be doing with interest rates over the course of the next 12 months? The 2-year yield is at 2.47%, so that is concluding there isn't going to be another interest rate hike until 2021. If the Federal Reserve thinks they're going to raise rates once this year, I think then the market will take that in its stride. On the other hand, if they think they're going to raise rates twice this year, not a mind how many they're going to raise next year, then that is likely to be cause for some concern in stocks, and we could probably see some consolidation. I think that is what we're beginning to see, some people taking money off the table in here today because they have the risk from what we anticipate the Fed are going to say tomorrow. I think that is perhaps the most important point that we have in here today, that the Federal Reserve is going to be making some prognostications about what they think the outlook for interest rates is going to be over the next year. If we look at the 10-year future, it has pulled back over the course of the last year, and there's been a pretty significant rebound in here over the course of the last few months. On each of the last couple of occasions, it has not been able to sustain these moves above the trend mean. With the size of the deficits, it is increasingly inevitable that we're going to have some form of indigestion with regard to this, the quantity of bonds that are going to be issued. But we don't have a great deal of evidence to suggest that it is about to happen just yet. And the market is, I think, more concerned with the potential for a slowing economy, or that we're at the top of the interest rate cycle. Generally speaking, if you're at the top of the interest rate cycle, well, the next move will be for interest rate cuts, and they don't cut interest rates if the economic environment isn't deteriorating. There is this catch-22 situation that if the Federal Reserve does not decides that they are not going to raise interest rates and that they are worried about the economic outlook, well, then we're still largely in the Goldilocks scenario. It's when they usually start cutting interest rates that stock markets begin to take fright. That might be, or that is, I think, one of the things that people don't really appreciate. But when we do look at what we have in stock markets today, it does look like we're still in a demand-dominated environment. And but the big question is, how much of a consolidation are we going to get above the trend mean? And if we get a deeper consolidation than that, is it eventually going to find support at a progressively higher level? That's the really big question out there. Then gold prices have been steadying over the course of the last couple of weeks, and they're above the $1,300 area now, but still really quiet. There hasn't been a clear upward dynamic to confirm more than short-term support around this level. It will be when gold pushes above the $1,380 level that we'll have clear evidence of a return to demand dominance. I'm posting an article in here today talking about the fact that the Bank of International Settlements is going to reclassify gold reserves as cash on March 29th. And that's a potentially important development for some central banks, probably not the Federal Reserve or the Treasury in the USA, but for countries like Russia or China or Turkey or Argentina, where they do have some question marks over their currencies, then the fact that they can mark gold to market is going to boost the value of their respective reserves. And that means then that that's the basis against which they can lend, they can borrow money. And that's potentially quite beneficial in terms of global liquidity. So it also helps to explain why central banks have been so eager to buy gold over the course of the last 12 months. So that's a potentially important development. What it also potentially means is that gold is now more likely rather than less likely to trade in tandem with emerging markets. We've seen that it has been trading like an emerging market over the course of the last year, and that is probably going to become more of a factor with this reclassification by the Bank of International Settlements. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.